I'm going to turn the controls over to my man Daniel Libby here, and he's going to take you through with word of mouth, CKLN's award-winning news programming. So please don't touch that dial. I'll see y'all later. I'm outie.
Word of mouth Wednesday. Word up. We are here for another show here. This is May the 19th. Got a big show coming up tonight. My name's Daniel Libby, and for another Wednesday word of mouth news program, 7 to 8 p.m. First up, we'll be hearing an interview with Bonifacio Liegan and Melissa Rojas about the human rights in the Philippines and their new important movie, Dokut. And then we'll go local as Toronto prepares for the G20 security lockdown coming up later on this summer. Well, the downtown core is going to be locked down, and we'll bring you an interview tonight with the Press for Truth reporter Brian Law, and he's going to tell the story of being arrested recently for filming in the financial district prior to the G20 summit. Plus, we'll try to get some time to play the Richard Gage presentation from the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth event that took place at the U of T a few weeks ago. Plus, we got some music, some news, some events, free Mark Emery, and a whole lot more coming up tonight on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, so stay tuned. This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and we'll be right back at you.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
All right, word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and we've got our first segment to play today. Was actually sent in by the co-host and correspondent Robin Nieto, who's got a special report about the disappearances and abductions in the Philippines that have been going on. Robin Nieto interviewed Bonifacio Liegan, the screenwriter for the new movie Dokut, also known as The Disappeared. And it's described by Mr. Liegan as a film about the culture of impunity in the Philippines and how state violence has caught up to all parts of civil society. And Mr. Liegan was also abducted and tortured himself. He and Melissa Rojas, a Filipino-American community worker who was also abducted and tortured by the Philippine military, spoke to Robin Nieto in Toronto earlier today. And without further ado, here is that interview that we're going to get to that was sent in by the co-host, Robin Nieto.
All right, so I'm here with Bonifacio Liegan and Melissa Rojas. And they're going to be talking to us today about a new film that they're here to screen, and it's called Dokut, or The Disappeared. And we're just going to be talking about the context of the film, the political background in the Philippines.
Yes. The Philippines has been under Spain for 333 years and under the United States for 45 years. In 1946, we were supposed to have been granted independence, and so since 1946 to date, we have been a post-colony of the United States. And for the greater part of Philippine history, we are under American tutelage, and the elite has governed the Philippines for since I don't know when, and so the conflict in the Philippines now is between elite democracy versus, you know, the greater majority of our people who toil and do not get what they deserve in terms of government services, in terms of, you know, the rights that they ought to be enjoying.
Your film, if we can just talk about the film itself, what is the film about? The title is Disappeared.
The phenomenon started in the 70s when President Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law. Activists started disappearing and bodies found just like anywhere, with no one being held accountable. I myself have been a victim of abduction twice, in 1974 and 1994. And I have a sister who went missing in 1977 and has not been found to date. I was abducted by the Philippine military. And I know for a fact that my sister met the same fate. In fact, in the case that we filed against Marcos in Hawaii, the case of the case of my sister is one of the cases presented as evidence. In that case, there were 10,000 victims of the martial law regime that sought indemnification. The sad part is that that phenomenon of disappearances and extrajudicial killings has been happening even if martial law supposedly had been, you know, lifted going through the various administrations since President Cory Aquino. In 1994, I was abducted and tortured for the second time. The Philippines was under General Fidel Ramos when we were supposedly already, you know, have been guaranteed the rights under our constitution.
What is going on in the Philippines in terms of social organization, and what are the conditions that are making people respond in such a way to these types of policies in the Philippines that disappearances are happening regularly?
Yeah. Well, I think that has been the greatest frustration of the Philippine government. The Philippine government has been unable to stop protests against abductions and extrajudicial killings. It's really a tug of war. We take the risks. Some people have asked me why go on pursuing the case. I say, if I don't take the risk, who will? The case of Melissa is a very good case in point. She was abducted last year. And I think she's better off telling her own story.
Well, on May 19th, 2009, actually today is the 1 year anniversary from my abduction and torture. I had been a human rights activist, human rights advocate, and working in communities both in Los Angeles, Southern California, and also in the Philippines for over 15 years when I was abducted by the Philippine military. I was in La Paz province, Tarlac, on May 19th conducting health work when me, along with two of my other health workers, were abducted. And we were taken to Fort Magsaysay in Nueva Ecija, home of the 7th Infantry Division. And we were held in secret detention and tortured. And so my experience is the first case where a Filipino-American has been abducted in the Philippines under the Arroyo regime. And so it just shows that the disappearances, and I want to mention also killings and issues of torture are still going on. There have been over 1,100 cases of extrajudicial killings in the Philippines, over 200 cases of disappearances, and over 1,000 cases of torture since 2001, since President Macapagal Arroyo came into power.
You are born and raised in the United States?
I was born in the Philippines, but I came to the U.S. As a child, and so I grew up most of my life in the U.S. And I started doing volunteer work, got involved with human rights missions, going to the Philippines to investigate human rights, and also doing health work, volunteer health work in various communities, peasants, workers, women, indigenous peoples in the Philippines, mostly where there is a large lack of services such as health care. And majority of people are very poor, both in the urban communities and in the far-flung areas in the provinces.
So many Canadians, for instance, they do similar work to what you did in the Philippines, but around the world. But in your case, why would, you know, military abduct someone who's just doing community work?
I think that's something that, you're right, a common question even that I got in the U.S., what would drive, you know, the Philippine military to do this? The answer is that there is an operation called Oplan Bantaylaya, or Operation Freedom Watch. Ever since also President Bush in the U.S. declared a war on terror, the Philippines has been the second, declared the second front on the war on terror. And Arroyo does not distinguish between armed insurgents, armed rebels, and people that are in the open legal democratic movement that are just political activists. They're unarmed, and they are volunteers like me, health care volunteers, and even observers of, you know, and advocates of human rights, international delegations going into the Philippines. So whereas before Arroyo, there was a fine line that was drawn between, you know, it might be a very thin line between armed insurgents and legal and open democratic organizations and party list, that thin line has been removed. And most of those cases that I had mentioned earlier, they are of civilians. They are unarmed civilians and political activists that are specifically targeted by the military. They have a list, order of battle list. And when I was being interrogated, I was also told that I was in the order of battle. And what might be really shocking for Canadians to know is that initially in my early interrogation, they thought I was Canadian. And they told me, do you actually think that the Canadian government can do anything for you? They called me by a name, Maita. And Maita Santiago, incidentally, is a Canadian citizen that was in the Philippines, former spokesperson for Migrante International, which is, again, a migrants group that advocates for migrants' rights and overseas Filipino workers. And so she is also on the OB list, on the list. And so, you know, later on they did find out I was an American. So, you know, the Philippine military seems to think that, you know, the Canadian government will not even do anything about it. So I hope, and I don't believe that, you know, and I really hope that for people that live here in Canada, that, you know, they will come out and speak out against the issue, because it's not only, I know it happens in the Philippines, but, you know, it's happened in other parts of the world, like you've mentioned, in Latin America, and it keeps happening up until right now. And so issues of disappearances and torture, they are universal human rights issues that everyone, you know, should be concerned about, especially with the current climate, with this global war on so-called terror.
You're here, the both of you, screening this film, Dukot. Can you describe the film for the listeners who are interested in seeing it?
Yes. Dukot is a story, love story, in fact, of two sweethearts who are youth militant activists. They get abducted and tortured and transferred from one place to another by a special military unit. Over the course of their interrogation, they are asked their links with the so-called insurgents. They say nothing about it and insist that they are activists working for significant changes in the governance of the Philippines. As they go through their anguish and suffering, their parents start looking for them in hospitals, in police stations. They go to military camps, and they are given the roundabout. It is a call for Filipinos to be aware of what is commonly happening, but is not commonly told and spoken about.
What were some of the challenges to make this film in the Philippines, considering the violation of civil and human rights, and what challenges did you face when you had to actually bring out and distribute this film?
Two challenges, one coming from the government and two coming from the ordinary common moviegoer. We were prepared that the government would try its best to prevent the film from being exhibited. And when we submitted it to the classification board, the film and TV classification board, it was given an X rating. There was much negotiation. The government agency said the film tended to incite the people to rebellion. And in the Philippines, inciting to rebellion specifically means asking the people to rise up in arms, literally. And the director said, point to us one scene in the film that told the people to rise up in arms. There was not that scene. And so the discussion boiled down to one scene where the picture of the president was exhibited. It was a government office. And the agency said, okay, let's compromise. If you put out that portrait of the president, we would give the movie an R rating. We accepted the condition. Well, now it can be told because there was another scene in the movie that portrayed the portrait that exhibited the portrait of the president. We think that after that there was not much pressure against us, because maybe the government agency thought had they really prevented the film from being exhibited, that would have been a case for us. We would have really made an issue, an outcry.
The Filipino community here in Toronto is pretty substantial. Is it common knowledge, the politics that are happening in the Philippines today, in the community here?
I think it's an issue that a lot of people still in the Filipino community are either not aware about, but there's still a type of fear or denial around those issues because there's so much repression going on in the Philippines, and it's not often highlighted in the media. Very, very few media sources, even with the Ampatuan massacre that happened, election-related violence that massacred mostly women. During that time, it barely made the news, but it's a very relevant issue. So I think there's still a lot of education that needs to be done in advocacy.
We wish to invite one and all to see the Toronto screening of Dukot Desaparecidos, a human rights film. It is showing at the Nat Taylor Cinema, York University, screening on Saturday, 12:30 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. For more information, you can call telephone number 416-561-5103 or email migrantecanada@gmail.com.
Bonifacio and Melissa, I really want to thank the both of you for this interview today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Word up, word of mouth Wednesday, back here on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. And that was just the segment there, interview segment sent in by Robin Yetzo, the longtime co-host of the Word of Mouth Wednesday, who is also, he's taking a bit of a leave from being in the studio for, I think he's planning to be back in June. So look out for the return of Robin Yetzo. But until then, he'll be, he's been a correspondent sending a few things in. And that interview was with Bonifacio Lagan and Melissa Rojas of the new movie that's going to be screening in Toronto, somewhere around York University, I think, and in a few days. And well, I guess you can search the Migrante Canada for more information on this. But the movie is called Dukot, D-U-K-O-T, Dukot. This movie, which I guess translated means disappeared. Or that's the note I got here from Robin. So yeah, thanks to Robin Yetzo for sending that one in. And you know, we got a lot of stuff to get to here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday with all this stuff going on in Toronto, stuff to look out for the future. Well, looking out in the future, we might be time to start looking towards the past. And this track here is a track by Aphosphus, some underground Canadian hip hop. It's called Dinosaur Still Exist, featuring Touch. Stay tuned for Aphosphus and Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m. Word up.
My endoplasmic reticulum translate protein. I developed gills and started floating. Now I process oxygen out of an ion opening in my forehead. I grew out of asexual reproduction. Breathe atmosphere, use my mouth to suck it in. Face breathing, breeding, nomadic, hunter-gatherers, forever leaving, always arriving, surviving. Used to eat vegetables, but after the great flood, the tide bring desperation. I eat the dead and kill live things. Women used to be goddesses because of the lives they bring. Now wife, you hold down the hut, waiting for me crying. Dinosaurs still exist. 807,000 years later, this
enlightened sovereign
bitch holding down the fort. I'm overseas amongst the trees, killing
tarp
and Iraqis. It's 2012, not really sure what's happening. Biotechnological tracking from slug to military. millennium bug, the crack fiend with the postable thumb, zeros and ones, computer hacking.
There's 9,000 suns all dying at once. Gamma ray microwaves lighting my blunts. There's a billion more Earths in this system of stars. Hop the Kepler millennium settlers charge.
Before Christ, he was living inside huts and caves. Scratched the proof of our existence on a wall to stage. The gods frowned upon us all, sacrificed the slaves. The evolutional thought club will smash your face. Evolution equals techno music, drugs, and raves. Stick my dick inside a microchip, the thought's insane. Definition high, holodeck, digital slut. Digital schmuck, out the surface, unoriginal what? They found Barney Rubble drunk in a great white tunnel. Hacking up the ground with a makeshift shovel. Trying to act subtle, but his mind was frozen.
Foreign central banks.
But the lizards using mind control. In a world full of sodomites and satellite gods. Question everything to answer what defines us all. Channel flash, shattered masses like the Permian blast. Speaking tongue, shoving tongue inside an alien craft.
There's 9,000 suns all dying at once. Gamma ray microwaves lighting my blunts. There's a billion more Earths in this system of stars. Hop the Kepler millennium settlers charge. Straight to the sun, the planet's uninhabitable. Scientists try to fish for something magical. Catapult asteroids out of the Bible Belt. Why we pelt tribal hell? That needs a pop. It's like Adam and Eve, we're brother and sister. And
light and sovereignty then.
Up with their mixtures. Homozygotes breed moronic stick figures. Increasing the level of defect of triggers. The evolving on Mars, we watch the sun grow. It ruined our atmospheres, houses, and snow. We jettisoned reticent DNA specimens left in a petri dish. Ancestors' brethren. Draconas helped us, the reptoids astonished. Their biological makeup was like ours. So out of the stars, just came an experiment. They grew us some dinosaurs to prove we could bear with it. Then it allied with the Yucatan Peninsula. DNA strands began to rupture considerable. Our cells started combining with the minerals. Evolution, electric, commiserate, miserable.
There's 9,000 suns all dying at once. Gamma ray microwaves lighting my blunts. There's a billion more Earths in this system of stars. Hop the Kepler millennium settlers charge. Straight to the sun, the planet's uninhabitable. Scientists try to fish for something magical. Catapult asteroids out of the Bible Belt. Why we pelt tribal hell? That needs a prophet.
Word of mouth. We're back here on the show, and we got another interview coming up right here. You know, on CKLN, Word of Mouth, we're broadcasting here at the studio. It's on Ryerson University campus, and actually this campus is in downtown Toronto, right near the core of downtown Toronto, Yonge Dundas Square. Yonge Dundas Square is also known as a meeting spot for, you know, a lot of different groups getting info out. Especially on the weekends. And one of those groups on Saturdays is Toronto Truth Seekers. I've been going down checking out what the Toronto Truth Seekers are up to. And, well, one of the central or main media outlets of the Toronto Truth Seekers is Press for Truth. And Press for Truth is an independent media company which has been actually focusing recently on the upcoming G20. They've got footage of a drill. They got footage of a security drill, terror drill that took place a few weeks ago in the downtown in the financial district involving a heavily armed SWAT team and, I guess, actors acting. And, well, you can see the clips. They got footage of that. And then also, well, there was an even more shocking thing that happened even more recently involving a reporter from Press for Truth, who you're going to hear in this interview, Brian Law, and his arrest. But he's going to explain what happened in this clip, so you'll be able to hear it. And Brian Law is also the director of the upcoming movie United We Fall, which he talks about a bit. And the United We Fall is going to be debuting. It's going to be premiering in June at the Bloor Cinema, but he'll give you that. You'll hear those kind of details in this, but mostly it's on the situation, what happened involving this incident with being arrested for filming prior to the G20. 20.
Word up, Daniel Libby here, Word of Mouth Wednesday, and we've got a reporter here from the Press for Truth, Brian Law. What's going on here today? You're at Young Dundas?
We're down here today just, you know, kind of spreading some awareness, down here to hand out some flyers, some DVDs to people that are down here at Dundas Square. There's always a good turnout of people on a Saturday afternoon.
We got the Toronto Truth Seekers here on Saturday afternoons at Young Dundas Square, and I know the Press for Truth's been all around Toronto covering the G20. What's been going on with your latest coverage of the G20?
A lot of people have seen the video from last week. We were down covering the various areas that the G20 is going to be taking place in, including the Metro Toronto Convention Centre, the Financial District in Toronto, and the Toronto Film Studios, which are going to be used as a temporary prison and our temporary holding facility. So earlier in the day, before we went down to actually do our coverage, I went down to the Financial District and to a lot of these areas just to get B-roll for our edit later. And I was subsequently asked for identification from a private security officer, which I refused to surrender on the basis that he's a private security officer and I'm on a public street. He then called the police on me, which, you know, I had nothing to hide from the cops. I told them what my name was. I told them why I was filming. I was acting completely peacefully in doing all of this and being completely cordial with them and calm. And I had an officer in a squad car ask me all of my information, to which I told him I wasn't comfortable with surrendering information to him on the basis that I was acting lawfully and within my rights. He drove off and said thank you and let me go. And then I was approached by three officers, two at first on foot on the street, that then requested that they gave me an ultimatum. Either I turn my camera off or I give them ID, and I refuse to do either of those because under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, we have freedom of the press, for one, so I don't have to turn my camera off on a public sidewalk for news gathering purposes. I do not need a permit to film on a public sidewalk. We weren't even using tripods, so we weren't even blocking pedestrian traffic. There was nobody down there on that day on a Sunday walking around in the financial district. And I don't have to surrender identification because I'm not doing anything illegal. So they don't like the fact that you stand up for your rights and that you're trying to you know, invoke your own rights that you're given in this country, your inalienable God-given rights to free speech, freedom of association, freedom of assembly, free press. And then once they put me in handcuffs when I refused to surrender identification, they searched my pockets illegally. They took out my identification of me and my friend, who wasn't even filming, so they put my friend in handcuffs under association, which is under the charter as well. They violated over half the charter, you know, not telling us what our rights were, not telling us what we were being arrested for. I don't even think we were officially under arrest, and I paid for an arrest report to be sent to me, and under this bureaucratic system, it's going to take 30 days for me to even find out what they reported on. But I was doing nothing illegal the entire time. They kept me in handcuffs for 40 minutes only to let me go eventually and to tell me that I could pick up a copy of my arrest report. The next day when I went to go and pick up a copy of my arrest report, I was told by the secretary that they might not even have an arrest report available, but they're going to see. You know, I don't think that we should have to surrender identification to somebody. We do not live in 1934 Germany, and, you know, this is not Colombia, this is not China, this is Canada. This is the true North, strong and free, and I am strong and I am free, and I am not going to surrender any of my rights for the guarantee of security, especially for a group of private bankers that are going to be coming up for the G20. So it's completely unwarranted to put people in handcuffs just so that you can take their identification out of their pockets and turn their camera off as well. Completely illegal to do that. He also tried to eject the tape from the camera, but couldn't figure out how to operate the eject button. So, yeah, I'm going to be pursuing this to its full extent, and I don't want this to happen to other filmmakers in the city and other, you know, truthers that are going out and trying to get information that the mainstream media should be covering, and they're not, so.
Definitely, yeah, and that's why I'm glad that pressfortruth.ca is out doing this work, covering these issues like the G20 and this whole incident that you're talking about, with the reasoning of behind it, of why this happened. You were mentioning it was because you're filming, but then also because you didn't give ID. But then you also mentioned that they really didn't give a reason, or?
Well, when they originally put me in handcuffs, they told me that I was being arrested because I wouldn't surrender identification. And when I told them that, you know, it's not a law that I have to surrender identification to the cop, we have the right to remain silent. And that rule literally means, and I should tell people out there, you know, that I'm aware of a lot of these rules because my father's a retired police officer of 35 years. He was on the SWAT team. He's been a traffic cop. He's been a beat cop. He's been behind the desk. He retired as a superintendent. So he's experienced the full range of what the police are and are not allowed to do. And he helps write policy for the York Regional Police, or at least he did that as part of his job. And so, I mean, I know that you do not have to surrender identification to the police. If you're driving a vehicle and they pull you over, yes, you have to surrender identification because you need to show that you're able to drive a vehicle. If you're walking around in the streets, you do not need to surrender identification to the cops. It's a common misconception. Most people will surrender it just to be compliant with an authority figure, but it is by no means a requirement, and you're within your rights to deny him access to any information on your person, and you're within your rights to deny him illegal search of your bags unless he has a reason to do that. And they wouldn't give me any reason why I was being arrested. They said I was being detained for investigation, and even under the Canadian Charter, any arrest or detention deserves a reason why you're being arrested or detained. And the overall reason they gave me it was because I wouldn't tell them who I was. They wanted to know who I was, and they were going to get the information whether they had to do it legally or illegally. And in this case, they chose to take the illegal path, and, you know, I was completely calm through the whole thing. And, you know, and overall, I mean, I don't even blame the individual police officers. I think it's the whole system of telling these early young recruits that, you know, they have the authority and the mandate to demand identification from people on the streets, and that when you stand up for your rights, you're standing up against an authority figure who's going to tell you, well, you don't have the right to stand up against me. I'm a police officer. You have to surrender ID to me. You do not have to surrender identification to any police officer or authority figure unless you have committed an offense. And they need to tell you what offense you've committed, and then they need to give you access to legal counsel immediately so that you can start to defend yourself. You have every right in this country to know why you're being arrested. You don't need to be just randomly detained by the police. And, you know, if this type of stuff is going to happen, then I'm going to take a stance against it, because I don't want to see this type of stuff happen. I want to be able to come down and film on a public sidewalk and take a shot of a random building that you can see from 40 miles away and not have to worry about some guy claiming that I'm doing pre-operative surveillance on their building. It's absolutely absurd to think that a man with a shoulder-mounted broadcast camera, a tripod that is over 4 feet long, strapped across his back, and an equipment bag, walking around with a rain cover on the bag, is going to be doing operative surveillance or preoperative surveillance on a building. It's more likely going to be a person with a cell phone camera, or, you know what, I can give the cops a little detective note here. It's most likely going to be a person on the internet looking at Google Street View, where you can see 360 degrees around you in HD quality. If they want to worry about a security breach, why don't they blame the ominous Orwellian, like, Google van that drove all around the entire city getting images of everybody and everywhere all over, mapping out our entire city and putting it out there for everybody to see? If you're worried about people doing preoperative surveillance, I would call the preoperative surveillers Google.
It's important to get this info out, I think, right before this G20 we got coming up at the end of June. So, you know, we're a bit more than a month away. Is some of the reason why Press for Truth has been focusing on this because you're concerned about the agenda of the G20?
Absolutely. I mean, the G20 is all about globalizing the entire economy. That's why they call it the Global 20. It started off with the G7 back in the 1970s. That molded into the G8, which became a more powerful group. And now it's the G20. It's the 20 most powerful countries deciding on policy, specifically right now, economic and monetary policy that they're trying to decide on for the entire world. They're trying to give more rules to the IMF to be able to go into countries and bail them out and give special loaning privileges to certain countries. They're trying to establish financial stability boards that have the ability to go into any country that's a member of the G20 and set financial policy. And the idea of sovereignty is that if you don't like the rules in a country, well, you're free to move away to another country. But if the rules are going to be the same all over the place, well, that's setting up a global feudal state where everybody is under a certain regimented system, and that's just never going to work because you're never going to get everybody on the same page. And you need people to be diverse. You need diversity of opinion. You need diversity of rules. And sovereignty does not cause wars. Wars are not caused by sovereign nations disagreeing with each other. These wars are being caused by people who stand to profit from doing all of this. So, I mean, you know, the G20 is all about centralizing the power of the entire world's economy in the hands of a very few people. And most of these people are private bankers. And you know, the fact that we're going down there and covering this is an attempt to give some of the information back to the people, because knowledge is power. That's why we're covering the G20, because the mainstream media is painting the idea that the only solution to the chaos of sovereignty is for everybody to unite to one sort of feudal state, and it's not going to work. People are not going to stand for it, and I think they're curious to experiment with globalization. I just think that the model of globalization doesn't take into account people's rights to free speech, people's rights to be able to have access to free media, and they want to shut that down. They want to control every asset of our lives, or every facet of our lives, and that's why we're out here, is because, you know, I want my children to grow up in a world where they have the ability to walk down the street without having to fear giving up identification to a police officer. I mean, go bother somebody who's doing something wrong. Don't bother the people who are doing things right.
For real, and I got to speak with Dan Dix at Freedom Fest, and he was mentioning something about a movie screening. Do you have any details on this?
Yeah, our film United We Fall is going to be premiering at the Bloor Cinema on June 18th at 7 p.m. You can get tickets at pressfortruth.ca, conspiracyculture.com. If you want more information on different ways to purchase tickets, you can purchase them by Visa, MasterCard, over the phone, through PayPal, on the internet, in person at Conspiracy Culture, in the store at Conspiracy Culture at 1696 Queen Street West in Toronto. You can also purchase them at the door on the day, and tickets are going to be $10 a piece. We're throwing special events from here until June 18th. Some of them are going to be taking place at Conspiracy Culture. Some of them are going to be taking place at Sydney White's propaganda class. And it's 7 p.m. at the Bloor Cinema on June 18th, 2010, is going to be the worldwide premiere of United We Fall. So if you're available, tune into it, because you know, it's going to be the first screening and people are going to get a chance to see it on the big screen. There's going to be a question and answer period after the fact, and Richard Sirrett from the Conspiracy Show AM 740 is going to be hosting the event as well.
Thanks for talking with us, Brian Law.
CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m. We are back here on the show. It's about 7:38 p.m. And that was just an interview there with Brian Law of Press for Truth, and also the director of United We Fall. And you can check out pressfortruth.ca for more info on the incident that happened with filming prior to the G20. You can check out some of the clips that they got up of the G20 Toronto getting ready for the big lockdown coming up with the G20 coming in June 26th and 27th, 2010. The countdown is on, and there's lots of, or different groups are getting involved with G20 activism and media setup. The Toronto Media Co-op has got a site that they're working on, 2010.mediacoop.ca, and that site used to be the one that they had, the Vancouver Media Co-op had, for the Winter Olympics, and now they're going to switch it over to the G20 as the world gets ready to watch the G20. What's been going on? I've been posting some clips online. You can find clips on YouTube. And I posted a few clips with that interview actually just earlier today. That what you just heard with Brian Law was the full thing. So you just got to hear the story of what happened when Brian Law got in trouble with authorities for having a camera in the financial district before the G20. Now, there's that going on, and you got to check pressfortruth.ca or conspiracyculture.com for information on the United We Fall screening. Now, United We Fall is the movie that Press for Truth's been working on for a few years now. That's been building up, and well, in June 18th, I believe it is, but you can get that info on online. And well, here's a track by Elf Transporter. Word up. It's called I Awoke. Resist them with all force. A fucking government endlessly packaging up divorce from the source of our compassion and awareness dispensed in exchange for the dollar glitz and the glamour. With the haves living it up in their manner, while the have-nots live locked down in a slammer. Underwent banner, sheer fabric veneer, but while fear seems to guide us, trust our flights are doomed. Like a harpoon balloon maroon, while we broke our world, I'm getting premature. I'm schooled in a rude world, rude for the baddest. Cruel and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality with brutality is the status quo. I awoke, schooled in a room.
killing children, civilians killing the millions. Resilient military building beyond our ceiling and shielding. No one yielding nothing to stuff in the mass graves. Securing the next wave of predictable rampage. And while they talking to up in their campaign, arms dealers round the globe pop champagne. And train their stock market shares to gain. While people bearing the pain from Reagan to Hussein. W. Bush to Bin Laden, obviously the forgotten their lessons, daily progression, compliments of CIA. Greed at full speed, the stampede away. So we can read the next day. Who's the next prey? The victim, fundamentally, fundamentalists sitting on both sides. Agree while boats capsize at sea. The trick is to thrive while the innocent die free. The trick is to lie and get away scot-free. The trick is to thrive while the innocent refugee stays incarcerated for the state of your salary. What? Cool in a real world, blue for the baddest. Cool and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality and brutality is the status quo. Schooled in a real world, brew for the maddest. Cool and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality where duality is the status. Whoa. Proceed beyond the greed and degrees of intrigue and weed with humanity's vanities, bleak calamities, bleed and leak like Greek tragedies. Anointed in the anatomy of duality's blasphemy, cultivating impact everlasting, though lacking the mastery to comprehend catastrophe at the altar of maps, of which we ourselves author in fact. Then misinterpret in a blur of brain rinse, convinced that the mirage is real. Hypnotic viral spirals of mass appeal, media pornographic barrage and cinderary like flint, making us look all hard but have to squint for hints of truth to awaken and convey ourselves. Off the carousel and beyond conveyor belts, and we can waylay our dreams. Melting on assembly lines, a grind obscene, unsustainable means. A line blind to see only a dire lens to extend and cast over the whole environment. No more can we keep silent. Schooled in a real world, blue for the maddest. Cool and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality where brutality is the status quo. I awoke. Schooled in a real world, blue for the maddest. Cool and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality where duality is the status quo. I awoke. Schooled in a real world, blue for the maddest. Cool and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality where brutality is the status quo. Schooled in a room, blue for the maddest. Cool and inhumane rule of the baddest. Reality where duality is the status. Whoa.
Breakthrough.
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 Word of mouth Wednesday. Word up. It's just a track here by Elf Transporter. I awoke. Just playing it because I was just thinking about this the other day, because I actually got a call out of the blue. You don't know who's going to call you in this day and age, and I actually got a call from Elf Transporter, who I had met when I went to Australia actually about 5 years ago, and I was in Melbourne, Australia, and that's where Elf Transporter is stationed, although he is from, I guess he's originally American, but he's been in Australia for I think something like 20 years now. So anyways, I just got a call from him, so I was thinking about Elf Transporter. I figured it'd be a good time to play a classic track from Down Under, take it an international flavor here with the music. So we bring it from Down Under to Up North, Toronto, Word Up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. Lots of things going on, lots of things happening. We got headlines here. Major situation involving the extradition of Mark Emery. And there's actually going to be a worldwide rally action taking place this Saturday, May 22nd. And we've been talking about Mark Emery the past few weeks. And he's been in the news because it's on right now. The extradition has been ordered by the Justice Minister, Rob Nicholson. And he's going to be extradited to the United States for something that he would only be charged a fine for in Canada. So, you know, that's a situation there involving Mark Emery. And, well, we got a phone call here, so maybe I'll just hold on. We'll be right back. All right, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're just moving on here in the Word of Mouth show, and I just wanted to get to another clip here that we got. We got a clip here because this one was actually requested by some listeners of the Word of Mouth Wednesday. They wanted to hear more because we played a few clips of in the past of David Ray Griffin when he was here in Toronto speaking about the 9/11 Truth issues with the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth event that took place at U of T a few weeks ago. So actually what I got here is a few minutes of the Richard Gage speech. And Richard Gage is an architect who's been focusing a lot on 9/11 Truth, on the situation, you know, what happened on September 11th, 2001. And well, here is his presentation where he was focusing a lot on the World Trade Center 7. Now, not only were the two twin towers of the World Trade Center destroyed on September 11th, 2001, but also later on in the day, later on in the afternoon, was World Trade Center 7. A third building fell on that day. And well, here's Richard Gage's theories on what happened.
A lot of attention, and of course, not all of it is shiny, but that's the start. First, they ignore you, then they ridicule you. I think we're in that stage. I think something like then they get pissed off, and then you win. Well, good evening. Thank you for your courage and for your willingness to reconsider the very difficult subject of 9/11 and the destruction of the World Trade Center with its staggering loss of life. Just as architecture and engineering projects are sometimes quite difficult, sometimes quite joyful, this particular one has been one of the most difficult. But not difficult in terms of reaching conclusions, but difficult in terms of the implications of those conclusions. And finding people open-minded and willing enough to come and hear the evidence that we present. People who are not afraid to look at the evidence. So my commitment to you tonight is to speak that truth, to leave you with extremely valuable science-based information. I believe that you'll come to a new understanding about what is science and what is conspiracy. But please don't believe me. We're not looking for believers. This is not some kind of New Age religion. Check out every fact you hear. After all, two major wars started as a result of 9/11. We've lost many of our freedoms in the United States, and many, of course, here in Canada as well. Well, I've been employed with a local San Francisco Bay Area architecture firm, a few of them. I'm now devoting, though, 100% of my time and energy to this cause. Let's get a background on public perception of the alternative view of 9/11. Time magazine says that 36% of Americans want a new investigation. It's not a fringe phenomenon. It's a mainstream political reality. Curiously enough, another poll in 2007 by Scripps Howard, Ohio University, finds that 16% of Americans believe that the World Trade Center Twin Towers were brought down by explosive demolition. Well, those towers are hit by airplanes. That's never happened before. Well, not here in Building 7. It comes down at about 5:20 in the afternoon, so it survived some of the debris hitting it. The ditch did some moderate damage to it, but NIST says that damage wasn't consequential, not a factor in its collapse. You can see Building 7 here in the distance beyond the already fallen North Tower. So let's see if it has any of those characteristics. Does it have a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure, for instance? Let's listen to Daryl, a medical student, interviewed that evening on New York 1010 Winds Radio.
On fire, and you know, we heard this sound, it sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was, well, it looked like there was a shockwave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out, and you know, it was horrifying. And then, you know, about a second later, the bomb floor caved out, and the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down on the way to the ground.
A shockwave ripping through the building, the sound of a clap of thunder, windows busting out, and then the building coming down. Okay? Not the building coming down and causing these things. We'll see this again and again. Do we have a straight down symmetrical collapse into this building's footprint? Well, for many of you, this is the first view you have of the collapse of this building. Let's listen to Dan Rather narrate it for us.
Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself. It's an amazing, incredible picture work. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before. A building was deliberately destroyed by low-priced dynamite to knock it down.
Dan has never repeated those words since 9/11, and many of us have not seen the building come down at all since 9/11. It's maybe had two or three airings that I'm aware of on mainstream media, and yet it is the third worst structural failure in modern history, the other two being the Twin Towers. I'm not convinced yet. Let's look at a side-by-side view with Building 7 on the left and a known controlled demolition on the right. Is there any comparison? Is there enough comparison to warrant a real investigation into the possible use of explosive demolition? Most of us think so. What is the cause of the building, according to NIST, in its final report? The building's collapse. We have office fires, normal office fires, brought this building down. Up on the 12th floor, and the 13th floor, which, by the way, was occupied by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which lost thousands of very valuable hard copy files related to hundreds of cases it was actively working on against Wall Street companies like Enron and WorldCom. So we want a real investigation of this fire.
Yeah, and the investigation continues. 9/11 Truth is the movement. And, you know, the architects and engineers have been actually on tour. Richard Gage is now, this is his main job now, is touring around and talking about the situation that happened on September 11th and the questions that still remain and the call for an investigation that still continues. So that was just a bit of the speech that Richard Gage gave, focusing on the World Trade Center 7, the third tower that fell on September 11th, and he went on a bit more in the discussion, but we don't have time to play all of it. So maybe even in some upcoming episodes, we'll play some more clips from that very interesting night. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And next time Richard Gage or David Ray Griffin's in Toronto, I'd recommend you might want to check it out if you are not, especially if you're not convinced that there is a major conspiracy involved, then, you know, these guys can, well, they've got a lot of info to help you question, what is going on. And, there is a lot of stuff going on here. And this is the Word of Mouth Wednesday.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday.
And there you just heard a bit of Kevin Annett. That was just recorded when Kevin Annett was in Toronto a few months back at an action in front of one of the churches. And I actually just got an update today, an urgent action alert from Kevin Annett and the friends and relatives of the disappeared in Canada. You can check out their website, hiddenfromhistory.org. And it's dated May 19th, 2010. Occupied Squamish Nation territory, five of our Aboriginal members and activists have died since December, and a sixth is missing and presumed dead. All of these people were public critics of the Roman Catholic Church's killing of the residential school children and had participated in protests against the church and the Anglican Church and the United Church of Canada. Their names are Johnny Bingo Dawson, who died December 8th, 2009, after a severe beating by three Vancouver policemen, and Mike Wixson, who died February 2010, cause unknown. Elder Philippa Ryan died in April 2010 from cancer, which he had for less than a month. And then Norma Jean Baptiste died in early May 2010 of an apparent heart attack. Chief Louis Daniels died May 16th, 2010. 10 in a Winnipeg hospital, unknown cause, and missing as William Combs. William Combs was an eyewitness to the killings in the Catholic residential schools in Kamloops and Mission, BC, and a regular speaker on the weekly radio program Hidden from History. So Kevin Annan has his own radio program, Hidden from History. I guess if you're out in the West Coast in the Vancouver area, you can probably hear that, or you can hear it online, hiddenfromhistory.org. We ask, okay, this is in the back to the press release here. We ask to help us stop any more of these killings by supporting our campaign to bring the churches and government of Canada to trial for their crimes against humanity, to confront the Pope in London and Rome next September. So Kevin Annett is letting, I guess, the press know and the world know that he is planning to go back to Rome for his ongoing exorcism of the Vatican. And the friends and relatives of the disappeared, please share this alert with your network and media. Join us in September in Europe. What I just read was written by Kevin Annett and the surviving members of the executive of the friends and relatives of the disappeared of Canada. And you can find more information at hiddenfromhistory.org of all this stuff that's been going on. Well, you know, there's lots going on, but. Well, here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday for this Wednesday, we're almost getting ready to wrap up here. We got the Blue Remedy coming up next. So just want to read out a few event listings here, because we started off the show with Robin Nieto's interview with Bonifacio Legan and Melissa Rojas about their movie Ducat, and Ducat will be screening it this Saturday, 12:30 and 3:30 p.m. at the Nat Taylor Cinema at York University. It's the part of the Stop the Killings in the Philippines campaign, so look out for Ducat, the movie, which is Abducted in English. And we got that coming up. And then also there's an event tomorrow. It's the Toronto Community Mobilization Network press conference and t-shirt making. Find out why people are mobilizing against the G8 G20. That's tomorrow, Thursday, May 20th at 10 a.m. at the Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street in Toronto. You can come here firsthand from the Toronto Community Mobilization Network. Hear about the issues and the reasons why people are mobilizing against the G8 and G20. Hear from the community organizers, activist groups, organizing the events and the days of action. G20.TorontoMobilize.org for more info on that. And then this Saturday is the Worldwide Rally. Worldwide actions are going to be taking place to repeal marijuana prohibition, stop Bill S-10, and free Mark Emery in Toronto. It's going to be at 360 University Avenue near the U.S. Consulate, in front of the U.S. Consulate this Saturday afternoon. Cannabis Culture. .com, freemark.ca, dopechef.com. Get all your info there. My name is Daniel Libby, and stay libertized. Keep it free, and well, word up, word of mouth, word is bond, word out.
Everywhere I go, people running around, trying to get to the top when the